Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, The Dynasty of Amsumam, text 44. Nabalye pi matirmayam adharme ramate kvache napasham utama shloka anya kinchana vastabaham na na balye in childhood api indeed mati attraction mayam of me adharme in irreligious principles, Ramate enjoys Kvachit at any time, Na nor Apaisham Isor Otamashokat, then the personality of Godhead, Anyat, anything else. Kinchana, anything, vastu, substance, aham, I. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I was never attracted, even in my childhood, by insignificant things or irreligious principles. I did not find anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport, Maharaj Kadvanga provides a typical example of a Krishna-conscious person. A Krishna-conscious person does not see anything to be important but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, nor does he accept anything within this material world as being unconnected to the Supreme Lord. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 8, 274, Stavaram jangamam deke deke taramurti sarvatra haya nija ishta devas sporati. The Mahabhagavata, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything mobile and immobile, but he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. Although a devotee is within the material world, he has no connection with it. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe. He accepts this material world in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee may be engaged in earning money, but he uses that money for propagating the Krishna consciousness movement by constructing large temples and establishing worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kadvanga Maharaj, therefore, was not a materialist. A materialist is always attached to wife, children, home, property, and many other things for sense gratification. But as stated above, Kadvanga Maharaj was not attached to such things, nor could he think of anything existing without the presence of the Supreme Lord. Ishavasham idam sarvam. Everything is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, this consciousness is not for the ordinary person, but one takes to the path of devotional service. As prescribed in the Nectar of Devotion, he can be trained in this consciousness and attain perfect understanding. For a Krishna-conscious person, nothing is palatable without a relationship with Krishna. So the text again. I was never attracted, even in my childhood, by insignificant things or irreligious principles. I did not find anything more substantial than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The aim of the Hare Krishna movement is to wake up out of our dream, or maybe a nightmare, depending on what kind of dream we're having. Generally, it's a nightmare. when we're dreaming, it's very hard to understand what it's like to be awake. That's what it means to be dreaming. So right now, we don't know entirely what it's like to be awake, but we're at least in the process of someone trying to shake us to wake us up. Reality is perceivable by our intelligence at the present moment to some extent. In other words, if we actually use our intelligence, then we're able to see things better than we presently do. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Deinosminita dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dahantra praptir diryas tatra namuyati. Krishna begins instructing Arjuna by telling him that our body is changing. Now, most of us are quite concerned the fact that our body is changing, because it means we're getting older. And everyone would like to get younger rather than older. Nowadays, even if you're 20 years old or 25 years old, you're thinking, I'm very old. Life is almost finished. And yet when we're 10 years old, we want to be 20. When we're 20, we want to be 21. When we're 21, we want to be 10 years old again. Such is life in Kali Yuga. But actually, this body has nothing to do with ourselves because we're not in control of this body entirely. We have some control due to the fact that we have a capacity to desire, but ultimately we're not directly in control of anything. Ultimately, it's up to Krishna because his body is actually Krishna's body. Now, if we understand we're eternal, then we might consider that I'm not actually very much aware of reality because I'm not even aware of myself, which would come as make us a little bit more humble than we usually are, because when we forget that we're a spiritual soul, whoever we might be, they say we're 1/10,000th the size of the tip of hair in size, there's no measuring stick for us to measure ourselves against, like when we're 10 years old, we may have something, they measure our height all the time. But they say we're 1/10,000th the size of the tip here in size, but there's no measuring stick that small. Even if there was, we would know how could we enter into the heart of this body and measure ourselves and say, wow, I didn't realize I was so tiny. And the fact that there is a super soul within our heart giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Now, who can deny that these are three of our experiences all the time? Our awareness is our knowledge. And what we're trying to remember in the present circumstance, under this awareness, that's called remembrance. And what we can't remember, that's what we've forgotten, which is good, because if we had to remember everything that we ever did, it would be very embarrassing. If I remember my last lifetime and discovered I was a frog, it would be quite embarrassing. Most people, when they regress, when they have a regression, they always wind up a princess or a king or something. No one winds up a frog. What to speak of a fly who happened to get eaten by a frog? So it would be quite disturbing. Remembering that incident in our past life, I was flying along looking for something to eat, and somehow or another this big thing came and grabbed onto me, and that was my end, and here I am now. Every time we saw a frog, we'd get very nervous. What to speak of the countless number of births we've taken and had to leave those bodies and take another one. How many traumatic experiences we've had in so many lifetimes. So forgetfulness is necessary. As a matter of fact, sometimes we try and forget something, and we can't do it, and we can't forget it, and we go crazy. Because we're already crazy, we become more disturbed than we already are, trying to forget something we can't forget. So there's someone who's supplying these things. Otherwise, if memory was completely under my control, then why can't I remember someone's name? And what do I have to do? I have to search my memory, which is kind of like a prayer. We have to start searching, please Krishna, give me a hint. And then Krishna says, well, why don't you start with A? See if A reminds you of something. And then B, then C. It didn't work, Krishna. Okay, well, tough luck. Yeah, just why don't you ask them for their name? So there is a person guiding us, giving us intelligence. How to utilize our remembrance and our forgetfulness. So if we don't recognize that person, then we're in ignorance. Of course, we're in ignorance anyhow, but if we don't understand we're eternal, we're certainly in ignorance. And if we don't recognize that there's a super soul, we're also further in ignorance. And then the very logic that there must be a person from which everything comes from, if we can't understand that logic, then we have no intelligence. If we think everything came out of nothing, on what basis can we think like that? What is our experience of everything coming out of nothing? We find that from people come people. So the original person must also be a person. If we had a father and mother, our father and mother had a father and mother. So the original father and mother must also be a person. Otherwise, how did we become a person? Has anyone ever given birth to the void? Yeah, I gave birth to a rock. And the rock met another rock. Someone else gave birth to a rock. And both rocks met each other and fell in love and produced a mouse. No, people give birth to children who produce other children. And the original father must also be a person. Otherwise, how did he give birth to anyone? So if these logics don't escape us, beginning with the fact that we're not this body, which should alarm us, the fact that how much ignorance am I am, that my very identity, who I actually am, I don't know. And yet I'm accepting so many other things based upon that conception. Based upon the conception that everything's just by accident. There's no intelligence behind anything, which means that Krishna is not giving us an intelligence to understand it. It's not that there's no intelligence. Whether we believe it or not, the sun's going to rise at a appointed time. It's going to set at a appointed time. Whether we believe it or not, if we eat food and chew it, there's a process, a scientific process by which it gets digested and converted into different parts of the body. Otherwise, how did that apple become our ear? Does anyone know the process of converting an apple into an ear? Or a banana into a toe? Or a lung or whatever else? But how did this body grow? We had a body this big. Well, in the womb of our mother, it was even smaller. And yet, by the food that she was eating, it grew. That means that an apple or a pear, hopefully she was a vegetarian, turned into the body that we had. How does it go on? Can we do it? Do we have any idea how it's happening? And yet, the scientists, they claim they know everything, practically speaking. But they don't even know how food is converted into different parts of our body. And even our subtle mind. So this is all being done by a person who is not waiting around for us to figure it out. It's going on already. Just like they're trying hard to make life out of matter. So if they could create one blade of grass after spending billions of dollars, what is the value? There are unlimited blades of grass already existing, created by someone else. For all your endeavor, what have you accomplished by creating a blade of grass? If you could even do it, which they've never been able to do it. But what is your credit? There's already someone creating trillions and quadrillions of blades of grass, and he's not spending any money at all to do it. Therefore it says, Sarabhutastam Atmanam, Sarabhutanichatmani. ikshate yoga yukta atma sarvatra samadarshanaha, that the true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized soul sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. And for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. So how do we come to that platform? Well, it's explained in this verse. Gata sangasya muktasya jnanavasita chetasaha yajacharata samagram praviliyate. Try that again, I missed one word there. Gata sangasya muktasya jnanavasita chetasaha yajacharata karmanam samagram sa praviliyate. The work of a person who's unattached to the modes of material nature. So how do we become unattached to the modes of material nature? By knowledge. If we're attached to the spiritual nature, the spiritual conception, because the modes exist as an experience. If we're attached to ignorance, then that's the consciousness we're in. If we're attached to passion, that's the consciousness we're in. And if we're attached to goodness, that's the consciousness we're in. And we're attached to Krishna, that supersedes all the different states of material consciousness we're in. In other words, either we can accept this body and our subtle mind and experience it, or we can add Krishna to it. We may not experience Krishna completely, but at least it's a transcendental experience on top of whatever material experience we presently have. And gradually that spiritual experience will burn away the modes of material nature and will only be left with spiritual experience. So we have to add something. And then gradually it will purify us if we add Krishna consciousness to whatever we're doing. So gata sangasya muktasya, a work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature, freed from them. Jnanavastita chetasa, who is actually situated in with knowledge. He sees things with knowledge. He works with knowledge. We're not in knowledge currently. We have some knowledge, we have some experience, but we're not situated in knowledge. And therefore we have to apply whatever knowledge we presently have and work with that knowledge. And then we'll get more, Krishna will give us more knowledge, because he sees we value the knowledge, we take it seriously, we're willing to utilize it and not waste it, and therefore Krishna will give us more of it. Jnanavasita chetasa yajacharata karmanam samagram praviliyate. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and is situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. So it's our consciousness that has to be changed, nothing else. We don't have to change who we are, even what we're doing. We don't have to change anything. We have to change our consciousness. And what will happen when we change our consciousness? It's not that we don't work in the material world. It's not that we don't try to do something here. But we try to do it in the understanding that what I'm doing will help my consciousness, will not actually impede it. So we have to work also to improve our consciousness. We just don't work trying to improve our consciousness. For instance, we come here to hear about Krishna consciousness. So we have to sit here and we have to employ our ears to try to hear. In order to do that, we have to employ our intelligence so that our mind actually tries to soak in what's being heard. Unless we utilize our intelligence and our activity, we won't see even where our mind's at. But when we see where our mind's at, then we have to try to bring it to our ears so we hear what's being said and then hear it with our intelligence. If the mind's disturbed, then the intelligence is lost, and the intelligence is utilized so that the mind and senses are engaged in Krishna consciousness, then the intelligence can actually perceive what's being said. And eventually the mind can actually experience what's being said also. So Brahmarpanam Brahmahaivir Brahmagno Brahmahutam Brahmaivatena Gandavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina. What does a person see? Of course, the translation is quite different from the Sanskrit that Prabhupada gives. The work, for him, Brahman is the absolute, Brahman is the offering, the so many different things. Brahma or Pranam Brahma. Brahman is the offering, the chant, the fire. So this is Brahma or Pranam Brahma. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is the same spiritual nature. So Prabhupada describes in his purport that here the activities of Krishna consciousness is described, or how activities in Krishna consciousness can ultimately lead one to the spiritual goal as described here. So there are various activities in Krishna consciousness, but presently the soul is in the material atmosphere. That is, he's attracted to desire things for sense gratification. And Krishna, by his material nature, is making the arrangements for it. That's all. Maya is presenting opportunities for sense gratification, and we happily accept them, or unhappily accept them, depending on the circumstances. But the more the activities in the material world are dovetailed to satisfy Krishna, Vishnu, the more they're done as a sacrifice, then the more the whole atmosphere becomes purified by complete absorption in Krishna consciousness. So it's not possible to walk out of the material atmosphere, but we have to, at the same time we're absorbed in the material atmosphere, do things, whatever we're doing, as a sacrifice for Vishnu, to Krishna, which is... Krishna says entails three different states. One is the acceptation that everything is factually Krishna's energy, and everything belongs to Krishna. It's not mine to do with it as I like. And therefore I have to become inquisitive. What does Krishna want me to do with this energy? What does he want me to do with my words? What he wants me to do with my mind? What is the attitude I should have? What is the activity I should have? And for that, we have to remember two things, Shastra and Guru. And the best Guru is one who's actually connecting us, at least in disciple succession, who's encouraging us to identify ourselves as the servant of the servant of the servant, and has the most knowledge. And the one who has most knowledge is, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the next, Krishnas Kaviraj says, Shiksha Guru Ke Tajani Krishna Swarup Antaryami Bhakti Shesa Eduri Rup. There are two types of gurus, Shiksha Gurus. Because after all, when we take initiation, generally we get mantras, but then we expect our Shiksha Guru, our initiating spiritual master, also to be one of our Shiksha Gurus. Otherwise, we just get some mantras, and when sometimes that happens, and then we are under the care of others who are superior to us. But there are two types of Shiksha Gurus Prabhupada mentions. One who is actually situated in transcendence, and he sees everything in relation to Krishna. He sees everything as it actually is. For him, that's the Mahabhagavat. He only sees Krishna everywhere. Does that mean in the lion he sees Krishna and embraces the lion? It's also Krishna. Everything's Krishna. The lion's Krishna. The ant's Krishna. You're Krishna. Everyone. No, he sees it's all Krishna's energy, and he sees it's Krishna's form. Because, what is that verse? Sarapani padam tat, sarvata shishima mukam, sarvata shitima loke, saram avriti tishtite. Everywhere his hands and legs, his eyes and faces. In this way, the super soul exists everywhere. So these hands are not my hands, luckily. They're Krishna's hands, and your hands are also Krishna's hands, everyone's hands. Your face, the eyes, everything is Krishna's. And we're simply the passenger in Krishna's chariot. And Krishna is the driver. That's why it's his, because he's actually driving. Now, it just so happens we have relation with Krishna, so we can ask him, like Arjuna asks Arjuna, please, Arjuna, take my my chariot into the middle of the battlefield. So Arjuna asked, and Krishna could have said, forget it, Arjuna, I don't feel like it. It's my day off. You take it. No, you can't do it. Okay. I'm the driver. Okay, I'll do it. So Krishna is very kind. He takes our chariot out to the middle of the battlefield. He took Arjuna's chariot out to the middle of the battlefield. So Krishna's very kind. He's reciprocating with our desires, and he's telling the material nature what to do in order to fulfill our material desires, or he's telling the spiritual energy that now is time, they want the soul wants to be utilized as an instrument, and this is my desire directly. This is what I want. So therefore, make this arrangement through the spiritual energy. In any case, it's all Krishna's energy, either spiritual energy or material energy. We always remain 1/10,000th the size of the tip here in size. And at least as well, as long as we're in the material world, we're conditioned, and or we become an instrument when we become fully Krishna conscious, or even partially Krishna conscious, through Krishna. And therefore, we're not connected anymore directly with what's, well, we are, because even a liberated soul can desire, and Krishna also fulfills those desires, according to what Krishna knows best. So generally, a conditioned soul doesn't know what to desire, and a liberated soul may have some idea, but he always relies upon Krishna, because he knows Krishna knows best. Even a liberated soul who's not, has perfect capacity to desire spiritually, he still knows that Krishna knows best, and therefore he doesn't tell Krishna what to do. He maybe sometimes he prays for his soul or something, but he leaves it up to Krishna for the most part. He asks Krishna, what do you think is best? And Krishna arranged things perfectly for the liberated soul. In any case, this body is not ours. It's under Krishna's control, either spiritually or materially. And we're not this body, we're transcendental. And everyone is actually Krishna's eternal servant. Everything is moving under Krishna's direction. Everyone's body is actually Krishna's body. So when one sees another body, he knows it's Krishna's. But he knows Krishna has variety. He knows Krishna acts in a certain way as a tiger. Generally, for most souls, Krishna arranges that if you go into a tiger's cage, it'll eat you. But if you're Murari Gupta, a Mahabhagavat, and you go in the jungle and you find a tiger, do your ecstatic love that you have, the tiger is going to be overwhelmed with love also. And even if you slap its face, it'll simply purr. Or you put venomous snakes on your lap, then it won't bite you. You can play around with them because the snake will be so overwhelmed by the spiritual energy coming from your heart that it's going to be completely blissful. And Krishna will tell the snake, don't bite him. Like Haridas Thakur was in a cave, and in the cave was a snake emanating poison, but Krishna told the snake, don't bite Haridas Thakur. But when some gentlemen came, and they saw Haridas Thakur was in a poisonous cave, and they were afraid of the snake, they told Haridas Thakur, maybe you should leave. But before Haridas Thakur left, then Krishna told the snake, get out. So the snake left. So Krishna, for a pure devotee, will arrange things. We can't expect it at our particular platform. Just like we can't expect that I'm so advanced, I'm a pure devotee, so I have all mystic powers, so I'll jump off a high-rise building, and by my mystic power, I'll fly. That will be a good test. If someone says, I'm a pure devotee, and then we can take them up to the roof of that one of these big buildings they're building, and say, you must have all mystic power, so here, go for it. Or we can give them a venomous snake to play around with and see if the snake is in bliss too, before it bites. So we can't imitate a pure devotee, because there's a practical... First, Prabhupada said, first deserve and then desire. So we have to ascertain what is our realistic situation at the present moment so we can take a step forward towards actually becoming Krishna conscious, actually becoming qualified that Krishna will appear within our heart along with the spiritual kingdom. So that's the science that's explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, ascertaining our present state of eligibility and how to increase that eligibility in Krishna consciousness. So if we believe in that everything is Krishna's, everything belongs to Krishna, everything is meant for Krishna's service, and the goal of life is to become a lover of Krishna, then we can take to the process and gradually come get Krishna's mercy through following the process given by him and his representatives, so that we become eligible to actually see Krishna everywhere, all the time, within everything, and always remember us, because we just like if you on the street and you see the shoes of a child, you just see any old shoes, you may not be very much attracted to them. But if you see your child's shoes in the street, even if they're dirty, still it reminds you of your child. So similarly, when we see everything and remember in relation with Krishna, then we'll automatically remember Krishna. And therefore, we'll always remember Krishna and see all his energies. Of course, in the state of pure Krishna consciousness, everything becomes attractive because Krishna is all attractive. So his energies are also attractive, including his material nature. We're a little attracted to it now, but when we become fully Krishna conscious, then his material nature will seem very beautiful also. Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. That state that the whole world is seen to be full of happiness because everything will be seen extremely beautiful and everything that's going on we'll see is Krishna's mercy. For the conditioned soul who wants to avoid Krishna and is suffering pains of the material energy, the liberated soul sees that this is good. This is good because then the soul will inquire how to stop my sinful activities, my wrong consciousness, and turn to Krishna. So the punishment is very good. And for one who is advancing Krishna consciousness, the liberated soul is very happy that this soul is going back to Godhead now and will get eternal blissful life with Krishna. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? It's interesting, if you see there's one picture of Prabhupada, looking at the fifth canto when it was first given to him, his translation of it, and he's looking at the hells where people are being tortured. There's like 26 or something hells, Kumbhipaka and Maharovana. You get put into a hell where you're fried alive on a plate made out of brass, plates heated underneath by intense fire and overhead by an intense sun, and being fried in your subtle body. Or Krimbi Bhojana, you're thrown into an ocean full of all kinds of horrible things and you have to eat. Or you're put into... Anyhow, we don't have to go into all the descriptions. And how Prabhupada's looking at it, and he's smiling. So does that mean Prabhupada was a sadist? He was enjoying seeing people suffering in these pictures? No, he understood that this is Krishna's divine arrangement, that these souls are becoming purified, so eventually they'll come back to Krishna and be eternally happy. So this is all part of the process. Krishna is all good, and all of Krishna's arrangements are all good too. So yes, Manuji. Do we have a... Yes, we have a...
I have two questions, if possible. First question is about Maharaj Katvanga here. He says that he's an example of a person who's Krishna conscious. And it says in the purport that a devotee can work and earn money and use it for propagating Krishna consciousness. And yet, quite a few times I saw that such devotees are considered inferior compared to those who earn their livelihood by cooking or distributing prasadam or distributing books and so on. If we are put in a situation like that, what should we do? How should we react? What should we respond?
How do you see things?
I see it as Prabhupada says in the purport, but I don't know what to respond to people who say that
sell them a book.
Your work is not devotional service.
Well, do you believe them? Who do you believe, Prabhupada, or you believe them?
No, I believe this, but I don't know what to respond as not to seem rude or something, because they are also devotees, those who say these things.
Well, probably the best thing to do is fold your hands and say, I'm just a fallen soul, I need your mercy, please help. Especially if anything, if they don't accept you as an authority, because they already decided that you're lowly and unworthy of being considered to be advanced, then what can you tell them? Because anything you tell them will be defending yourself, supposedly. So and therefore, fold your hands. Yeah, I'm just a fallen soul. I mean, that's what the devotees in Chaitanya Leela. They weren't anxious to be considered to be advanced souls. They were anxious. They were not anxious, but they just presented themselves as fallen souls. Please, I need your mercy.
What if we see it happen to someone else when we are present?
Then if you have enough Krishna and enough shastric knowledge, you can present it. But don't expect that every time you present shastric knowledge, someone will accept it. It takes some qualification to believe in shastra. Not everyone who has some doubts or has some misgivings about actually understand shastra very well. What to speak of accepting us? They don't accept us, they don't accept shastra, and therefore we can try, but generally speaking, we can't expect everyone to understand. Nor can we even expect ourselves to fully understand. Therefore, Prabhupada preached. He didn't. Prabhupada preached. Half the class would fall asleep. Prabhupada didn't stop preaching. Think, well, no one likes me. I'll walk out. He was hoping that something would. He preached pure Krishna consciousness, and he left the rest up to Krishna. He's simply a servant to his spiritual master, whatever he was doing. Therefore, he left the results up to Krishna.
Second question is about that logical thought that everybody had a mother and a father, and we had a mother and a father, and they were human, and each of them had a mother and a father, and so on. So the logical thing is that everyone must have a mother and a father who are human. And then if we go back, we see that Brahma doesn't have a mother.
He does. Krishna is his father and his mother.
Yeah, but then the question would arise in people's mind that, okay, I can have one person to be a mother and a father also.
Yes, if you're Brahma. If you're born from the womb, or the navel of Krishna. Krishna is the father, and he's also the mother. He gave birth to Brahma. Anyhow, Brahma didn't appear out of nothing. He appeared out of a lotus flower, on a lotus flower. So at least we know he had a father. Father, Krishna is his father. So the original source of Brahma is Krishna. Yes?
No, I was thinking that this argument can, if we give this argument, can be used against what we are saying. That's like, look, this is an example that we all need a mother and a father, but Brahma didn't. That might mean that there might be other exceptions also. How do we respond to such a thing, to such an argument?
Other exceptions?
Yes, well, if Brahma is an exception and he only has a father...
Prabhupada used to say, Krishna is our father and the Vedas are like our mother. So we only understand these things if you want to understand who your father is, then you have to ask your mother. So if we want to understand Krishna, who the source of everything is, then we have to ask our mother, the Vedas. So that's the example that Prabhupada used to use. As far as father and mother, originally, the idea is that we're defeating the argument that we came out of nothing.
Okay.
And that the original source is a person. Sometimes it's persons or a person. But the original source of Brahma was a person. So therefore we're also a person. It's not trying to...
To cover everything all day.
Right. It's just to try to give us an understanding that we came from a person.
Got it. Thank you.
Anything else? Yes. Did you raise your hand? Go ahead. We'll spend more time. Oh, he'll translate the question. Okay.
How can I develop spiritual desires?
Associate with devotees. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastri Hoy. Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastri Hoy. If you associate with devotees, then you'll develop the same desires that they have. Because we acquire, just like if you want to develop the desire to gamble, the best place to go is to a gambling house. If you want to develop the desire to collect butterflies, then you have to associate with people who are collecting butterflies, and they'll explain to you the science. And if they're enthusiastic about it, then you'll get some of their enthusiasm. You'll start collecting butterflies too. They'll tell you how wonderful it is, all the ecstasies they get from it. So if you associate with devotees, and you hear what they have to say and follow their example, then you'll also develop desire if you get a higher taste. Because everything develops. Vishaya vinivarthante. Are you translating? You understand. Nirharasya dehinam rasavaridam rasopyasya paramdrishva nivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in knowledge and consciousness. So if we associate with devotees and we feel some alleviation from our pains of material existence, and if we feel some growing spiritual strength, and we see things more clearly as they actually are, then we become encouraged. And that encouragement means our desire to follow the process is increasing. Our enthusiasm is increasing. Does that make sense? Good. Anything else? Okay.
Thank you for inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask how can we see us in realistic light? So what are some main things we can help ourselves with to see ourselves in realistic light?
The main thing we should do is chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and listen to it, and try to understand what it says. My only wish is that my consciousness is purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is perfection and fulfills all desires. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord birth after birth. From him ecstatic emanates. From him ignorance is destroyed. Actually, it's mistranslation. Anyhow, from this Vedic knowledge, we get transcendental knowledge coming from the devotees. And therefore, it destroys our ignorance. And therefore, we can understand things clearly, more clearly, gradually. And the clearer it is, then the more we'll be attached to the process and gradually we'll make progress that way. By keeping on the same process, follow the same, but with ever greater awareness of how to do it better.
Thank you.
Kala, Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.